It's to the best of our knowledge. I'm Anne Strainchamps. Let's cook dinner together. Just you and me. We've bought only the best food. Organic, pesticide-free, no preservatives, no additives. Now imagine doing all of this, but in the 19th century.
It's like a carnival of adulteration. There's no government standards for anything.
This is science writer Deborah Blum.
There was an insane amount of food fraud in the late 19th century. We had just opened up this candy box of new industrial chemicals, formaldehyde, sodium benzoate, borax.
Borax is the stuff that I use to scrub out my sink or to, you know, put on the counter to keep the ants away. You're saying people put that in food intentionally?
Yes.
There was no food safety, no regulation. Really, it's kind of amazing anyone survived.
I actually kind of love the borax story because they discovered these huge mining opportunities with borax out in California. And they discovered that it also had some antiseptic qualities, right? It was antimicrobial. And it doesn't taste that bad, which is one of the things that's really important. They put it in butter going to England. You actually had them say, the British love the taste of borax in their butter, right? It was a fury. This is a wonderful thing, and everything tastes better with borax. Because they were using borax and then, of course, formaldehyde, which is an embalming fluid, they started calling these preserved products embalmed beef, embalmed milk. One of the manufacturers, when he was talking about the use of borax in meat, would say, "We all eat embalmed beef, and we love it."
Embalmed beef. What a horrible thing to say about what you're eating.
Coffee. Coffee was simply a mix of a little coffee and a lot of fake, and people would char bones and crumble them in. They would dye sawdust, often with lead-based blacking compounds, and mix that in. And so people would actually speculate that the whole origin of the phrase "a muddy cup of coffee" came from the fact that you were drinking mud.
Ew. So complain all you want about overzealous government regulators, but without them, we would still be drinking dirt. Deborah Blum shares all the gory details with Steve Paulson. And Steve, who is not a picky eater, had one question. Did embalming food work?
Formaldehyde is a good preservative. It stops bodies from rotting. And in milk, it worked really well. Take this with a grain of salt, because I do not drink formaldehyde. But the story is that it's kind of slightly sweetish in taste. So you see this conversation in the 19th century about how it restores the taste of bad milk, right? Thanks to the wonders of formaldehyde, it has that fresh, sweet taste again. So in the case of dairy products, they loved formaldehyde.
So was it actually dangerous to put these substances, like formaldehyde and borax, in these foods?
People got sick or they died, and especially children. You're feeding what turned out to be higher and higher doses of formaldehyde to young children in their milk. They died. There was a case in Indianapolis, and they clocked more than 400 deaths.
Wow. So let's talk about the man at the center of your story, this chemistry professor named Harvey Washington Wiley, who was brought into the government to start testing some of these foods. Who was this guy?
So he was a Midwesterner, got an MD in Indiana. He got a chemistry degree at Harvard, and he had actually gone to Europe where they were much more advanced about this stuff. He was recruited by the federal government to be the chief chemist in agriculture's tiny Bureau of Chemistry. It had six chemists, and it was in a basement.
And then there was another thing he did. He actually got some of his people to taste some of these foods.
Yes.
To see if they would get sick.
This experiment started in 1902, and there's none of all the IRB and human subject
right.
protection rules that we have now. He's just like, yo, I'm going to ask for volunteers in the federal government to dine dangerously. And that's what he did. He set up this experiment that was nicknamed the Poison Squad by the local newspapers, in which he got young male government employees, clerks who had very little money and were happy to get free meals. And that was the sort of deal with the devil. We'll give you three free meals a day, beautifully cooked by our master chef and only using great ingredients. But half of you, for given periods of time, are going to have to also take capsules of the suspect compound of that particular test. So you'll be having borax with every meal, or you'll be having formaldehyde with every meal.
With a poison dinner party, you know, this group of young men to see how sick they're going to get.
It is really like that. You know, it's interesting because one of the things the Washington Post just loved the story and they saw endless opportunities for entertaining their readers with it. They actually created like a fake holiday menu. It's like turkey, a little borax, butter, rolls, a little borax. But basically what happened was they created a kitchen and a dining room in the basement of the agriculture department. They've got white tablecloths and ladder-back chairs. And the deal was that they had to eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner in this dining room, and they were not allowed to eat anything anywhere else. No go out for a beer with friends. No sneak a snack. I'm not sure you would be able to persuade anyone today to do that.
Right. So how sick did they get?
Some of them got really sick, and it really depended on the compound. With formaldehyde, people were really throwing up. So sick, so fast that they just canceled the test. With borax, it was more gradual. They took very low doses, and then they would ratchet the dose up. And what they found was at very low doses, you know, some of them were a little whiny, but no one was really sick. By the time you started hitting a medium dose, people had stomach upsets, they had GI upsets, they had headaches, they had bloating. Eating this cleanser on a daily basis was not working for them.
So he came up with all of these results. I mean, this really kind of remarkable science experiment to testing all these different foods. How did the food industry respond?
The food industry was really unhappy, really unhappy. The Pacific Borax Company, this will be a term we use today, fake news. They had their publicists assume a fake name and plant fake stories in newspapers across the country, criticizing Wiley and pretending that people were dying of food poisoning because borax was not around. I mean, you know, it was really crazy.
Wow. Now, there are some other sort of fascinating characters in the story that you tell. One is the writer Upton Sinclair, whose 1906 novel, The Jungle, was all about the appalling conditions in the stockyards of Chicago. And you know, he wanted to expose sort of how horrible the working conditions were in these slaughterhouses. But it sort of had other unintended effects, didn't it?
People were sort of already starting to simmer. And then you get these really crazy descriptions of food processing in the jungle in which they're poisoning rats, and then they just chop up the rat bodies and throw it into the meat, and meat is rotting and molding, and they scrape that off and throw a little formaldehyde or borax in it, and blood is dripping everywhere. There was just a firestorm of response.
Well, if you haven't made our listeners queasy up until now, I think you just
I can
did.
Do better. But when this book came out, of course, the Packers were like, this is fiction, this is fiction. And Doubleday Page had sent a copy of it to Roosevelt, Teddy Roosevelt, who was the president. And he, of course, he was, this can't be right. So he sent an investigative team. Everyone is like, this can't be right. And they found that it was worse also. And there's these horrible descriptions in their report of cows falling into the workers' latrines and then just being dragged across the floor and, you know, chopped up after that and going off into whatever. Roosevelt, when he got this report, used it to blackmail Congress. The first Meat Inspection Act passed in June of 1906, and with it, Wiley's long-fought-for food and drug law was passed right after that. So the one led to the momentum that finally pushed the other over.
So this sort of seems like ancient history now. all of this happened 100 years ago or so. We have a whole regulatory system in place to monitor food safety. Most of our foods are labeled. How safe is our food now?
It's a lot safer than it was in the 19th century. There are labels, and the government does consider this part of its business. We've laid down a foundation in which consumer protection is part of the job of government, which was not true in the 19th century. So that's a huge deal. So our food is safer, not as safe as it should be for all the reasons. And this, to me, was what made this story so applicable today. It's not as safe as it should be for all the reasons that it was not as safe as it should be in 1906 when we start duking out these regulations. We compromise a lot with business. And so they don't test everything. There are actually materials that have been used in cosmetics that have moved over to food, but they've never been safety tested for food because they didn't kill anyone when they were used as cosmetic formulas, right?
Even though we're now eating them.
That's exactly right. One of the myths is that if it's on your label, it's been safety tested. It hasn't necessarily been.
Sounds like in some ways we are still living in Harvey Wiley's world.
I think we are. I think we're smarter and better at it, but we have not grown up as much as I think he would have hoped we would have done. I think he was the dissatisfied food regulator of the early 20th century. He would be dissatisfied today.
Deborah Blum directs the Night Science Journalism Program at MIT, and she's the author of the new book, The Poison Squad. Steve Paulson talked with her